Good afternoon, everyone. It is 2 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, February 15, 2024. I would like to call the Ponce Inlet Town Council to order. I would ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that all council members are present in council chambers. And to begin, I do wish to comment on the time of our meeting. This earlier meeting is the first of four regularly scheduled meetings at 2 o'clock rather than at 6 o'clock on a trial basis, and we will all have the opportunity of assessing this change at a future time. And still, though, I want to remind everybody to please complete the citizen participation request form if you wish to speak during citizen participation and provide the filled-out sheet to our town clerk sitting in the front. Now, from the agenda, item 4, additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda. Are there any to the February 15th, 2024 agenda? Mike?
None from staff.
And, okay, seeing none, I move to adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted as presented. Now, item 5, citizen participation. This is a new place on our agenda at the beginning of our meeting for people to have the opportunity to come to the podium for up to 5 minutes and speak to us on an item that is not on the agenda. We hope to have more participation if we place this earlier in the agenda so that people can come up and speak right away and then have the choice to either remain for the rest of the meeting or leave, but those who wish to leave need not stay throughout our entire business meeting. Please make sure to speak into the mic and provide us first with your name and your street address. So to begin, I have Marco Beck.
Marco Beck, 4758 South Peninsula Drive. Good afternoon, Council. It's always a pleasure being here. I thought I would provide a little bit of food for thought for you folks, and specifically regarding the town's vision. Having been in management for over 30 years and being involved in strategic planning, I really have found that it is rare, and that strategic planning was for corporations, higher education, public sector, typically county level, not necessarily town level. But I found that rarely does a vision survive more than 10 years, let alone 20 and basically a generation. So I wanted to just present some food for thought regarding the vision and leave it up to you folks as to where we go. So the general background was for everyone. Vision was created in 2002. Looking at the process that took place, it was a great process. Stakeholders were involved. It wasn't time constrained. It really was a thorough process that took place. So kudos for those that were involved in making it such a really strong process. And there's the vision and some of the key elements regarding the value that we see in being necessary in the town. So it is a vision statement static? Maybe. Because the vision really reflects general town values. However, are there factors that warrant revisiting it? So, change is constant, folks. And I've just listed some of the items that clearly have changed since 2002. No present council member was on the council in 2002. Latest published updates actually This is incorrect. When I went on the town website, it was only 2019, but it was discovered, and so they updated it to 2022. What really shocked me was the next, demographics. Increased residents, 34%. This one really shocked me, the average age. Average age went up by 10 years. And this is, again, U.S. Census Bureau. And under 18 went down. Household incomes dramatically increased. Reduction in available lots for single-family homes. We see that, right? You walk around, drive around, you see more and more construction. Impact on environment continues to accelerate. Before moving here, I was told, they haven't seen a storm in 20 years. Now we see them every other year. And their intensity seems to be increasing. More recreational vehicles on the road. EV bikes, just a population boom of those. A stat that I read over the weekend was the compounded annual growth of e-bikes is now like 16%. So that's a lot. Couple that with a grant or a tax break that the state of Florida is providing residents to buy e-bikes, we're going to see a proliferation of more and more e-bikes. E-vehicles, but it also is taking cars off the road, which is a good thing. E-vehicles creating safety concerns. Where do you charge them? How do you deal with any fires? We've heard about that before. We are becoming more visible. There was a segment on HGTV about Ponson that someone buying here, and they highlighted what a great area it is. Also in publications, numerous publications. Single home pricing going up. We are still an attractive place to come. And lastly, technology has dramatically changed. Whether or not it's social media, the connectivity that we have nowadays, and just the overall access to information, and even lighting. I mean, I'm not sure you can buy an incandescent bulb anymore, anywhere. So that's it. Options are up there. I leave it up to you to consider it and think about where the town needs to go from here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. I want to say that I appreciate the time and the effort that you put into this presentation and the PowerPoint, and I thank you. You've given us our food for thought. Thank you. The next citizen participation request, Mark, it's you again, but this time in a separate role, not as a resident per se, but on behalf of Picky.
Mark Obeck, 4758 South Peninsula Drive. Just wanted to make note that I'm sure everyone is aware that the farmer's market's ability to operate on the parking lot north of 7-Eleven was terminated. As a result of that, the Picky Board got together and voted unanimously to pursue having the farmer's market at the north end of the community center. And we were going to go through the entire process of permitting and such. However, this morning I got a call from Nicole, who indicated that they got the permission from North Turn to locate the farmer's market in their parking lot. So just wanted to update folks because I know I was asked, what's community center going to do? We're going to hold off until their request for a North Turn's request or Nicole submitting that goes through the planning process and is approved. And if it is approved, then that's fine. We step back. If it's not approved, then we're willing to step in and locate the farmer's market at the community center.
Mark, thank you so much for that update. Very appreciated. Okay. And now, Terry Woodruff.
Hello. Terry Woodruff, 4495 South Atlantic, Unit 1040. This is the town's favorite topic, I know. Short-term rentals. Over the past 20 years, there have been many misunderstandings over the town's rental ordinances. I believe it was the LaBelles who were brave enough to stand in front of the town council and plead for help after numerous attempts to seek assistance from code enforcement. In 2021, the town council approved funds to hire an additional code enforcement officer to be dedicated to the town of Ponce Inlet rental program. The town hired a full-time rental enforcement officer, purchased a second vehicle for this position, renovated offices, approved a full-time administrative assistant for the department, and raised the annual rental permit fee from $125 to $550. The following conversations continue to circulate at Eastwind. Eastwind is zoned to be long-term rentals only. And here are the conversations that are going around once again. The rental code enforcer, Travis Muncy, does not care about short-term renters at Eastwind because his boss doesn't care. I was told by a current member of the board that they spoke, I'm sorry, Lois, but to you, and that you told them that they could rent at Eastwind for 1 week a month as long as they did not rent a second time during the month. I had a conversation the other day with Skip White. He told me that the town manager told him that Eastwind was allowed to rent for 1 week a month as long as they did not rent again for the second week in the month. Now, this has nothing to do with catching people violating. This is simply the definition that I'm looking for. So, Mayor, I am asking for you to poll the town council members, code enforcement officer, and the town manager, and ask them what the actual definition of short-term rentals means, because the next time that someone at Eastwind tells me that I talked to this person and this is what they say, I want to be able to tell them that I took my time to come before the town council and put myself out here, because believe me, a lot of people at Eastwind are going to have, I'm going to have a target on my back. But I want to know what your all's definition is. Has nothing to do with the proof I need or you need to prove that they're renting short term. Can you do that for me?
I'm not going to do a poll. What I'm going to do at this moment, if it's appropriate, is ask our town attorney to please address your question.
Okay. I appreciate that. Yes.
So definition of a rental, if my recollection is right, it is a 30-day rental. I mean, it's 30 days is the period. The challenge and why we can't separate what we can prove from how we enforce the code, though, is if I'm required to rent for 30 days. And I rent for 30 days. I sign a lease for 30 days, whatever the rate is for those 30 days. And my tenant stays for 7, 8, 9, 10, 15, 20. I cannot, as a landlord, control how long they stay. So what we as a town can prove is frequency of rental. And so if someone is renting for, if they have a tenant who stays for 7 days, but they signed a 30-day lease, they've complied with that definition. That's the challenge we have from a tying what the code defines with what code enforcement can prove.
I appreciate that. But my question was the definition. The definition is 28 consecutive days, correct?
Consecutive days.
Yes, 4 consecutive weeks.
Okay.
Okay,
may I ask another question?
Yes.
Okay. If I go out and rent a unit at Eastwind for the first week of May online, because you can do it all day long, and I go back and I rent another week, the third week of May, same unit, and I bring this to I bring this to code enforcement, is that proof?
You saying that it happened is not proof. What we have to bring to the board is competent substantial evidence.
Okay.
And let me finish.
Okay.
Somebody saying it happened is hearsay. So that's why when we work a case in code enforcement, we're looking for, can we get vehicles? Can we show vehicles coming and going? Can we show people coming and going? What type of hard evidence? Because The advertising on Airbnb is hearsay evidence. We can introduce it in front of a code board, but the code board cannot rely entirely on that. We have to have more. Neighbors saying to code enforcement, well, I saw this person there on these days. We can introduce it. It's hearsay. If that neighbor comes to the hearing and says, testifies under oath, this is what I witnessed, now it's no longer hearsay. So that's why code enforcement often is telling neighbors, please work with us. Please come to a hearing and testify, because we have to present evidence to the board, and the board cannot rule in the town's favor unless we meet that competent substantial evidence threshold.
Okay, let me ask it in a different way. If I go online and I rent a week on a unit in May, and 3 weeks later I rent that same unit in May, 2 weeks later, that would be two different rentals, same unit, in a 28 consecutive day period, and I bring my rental contract that I have because I booked it on Airbnb, I will get a contract, I bring it to code enforcement. Is that proof?
As long as we can authenticate that agreement, then yes. That means that somebody associated with that business says, did you sign this lease agreement? Yes, I did.
Okay, I have 56 seconds left, so I have another question. Why is it that code enforcement has not done that?
Not done what?
Has not gone out, booked a unit, and turned around and booked that same unit for 2 weeks later. Why have they not done that?
I don't know any city. I know cities that have talked about doing that. I don't know any city that has spent funds to do that.
Well, if you want to stop it, that's what you're going to have to do. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for your time. Mickey Launcher.
Good morning. Mickey Launcher. 4590 South Atlantic Avenue. First, I want to thank Mark for bringing up the farmer's market, because that's why I'm here today. What I'd like to do is read into the record a brief little note I put together so that I wouldn't ramble on and on and on. But as Mark pointed out, the farmer's market now finds its place in a spot where they need to relocate after the next 2 weeks. And as the, I'll just read this out so it won't waste your time, but to the Honorable Mayor Pritzky and esteemed members of the Town Council, I currently serve as the board president of Beacon Point Condominiums, located at 4590 South Atlantic Avenue in Ponce Inlet. I'm writing on behalf of the many owners and occupants of Beacon Point who wish to show their support for the Ponce Inlet Farmers Market. I don't believe I'm alone in saying that the market has been a marvelous addition to our community. In addition to fresh produce, one-of-a-kind items, one can find there every Sunday, the market also provides an amazing opportunity to socialize with our neighbors. I and many in our community are saddened that the market's now forced to find another home. It is our hope that the town council will recognize what an asset the market is for our community and do whatever it can to help facilitate a new location for this important part of the fabric of Ponce Inlet. I thank you in advance for your attention to this issue. Best regards. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I want you to know that we definitely have a process in place with the town, and it is unfolding as we speak. So I yes. So thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, so there are no other pink slips for our citizen participation. We will move forward to item 6, which are proclamations, presentations, and awards. The first, I want to discuss the proclamation that last meeting we had the privilege, you'll remember, of hearing from former council member Kat Atwood from Port Orange, and she was diagnosed with encephalitis and hopes to bring awareness to this illness, and she had asked that we have a proclamation prepared, which we agreed to do and we have done, and also to light up in red on February 22nd town properties for World Encephalitis Day. We will be doing that on February 22nd at night. We'll be lighting up in red Town Hall, the fire station, and the police station. But in the morning, at 9 o'clock, we are going to present to Ms. Atwood the proclamation, and I want to invite the council and everyone to attend as well. We want to bring awareness to this particular illness, which is so often misdiagnosed. So that is what we'll be doing February 22nd at 9 o'clock, and it's going to be right outside of council chambers. Next, we have a presentation. I'm delighted to invite Barbara Ann Hegan to come and speak with us. Ms. Hegan is the president and CEO of the Port Orange and South Daytona Chamber of Commerce and will be providing us with information about the chamber, one that our town, I am so proud to say, recently joined. So, Ms. Hegan, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Prinsky, and to your wonderful town manager, council members, and attorney. I am Barbara Ann Hegan. I represent the Port Orange South Daytona Chamber of Commerce. We're located in Port Orange, and we have another location in Daytona Beach Shores. We would like to extend a very warm welcome to the town of Ponce Inlet as our newest member. For a heartfelt thank you to Mayor Perinsky and Town Manager Michael Disher for their invaluable support of our chamber. This morning we had a mayor's breakfast, which your mayor so kindly participated in, and we were also honoring your Police Officer of the Year, Sergeant Rudd. And we are thrilled and honored to have you all part of these type of events. We firmly believe in the power of collaboration and networking as an essential component of fostering strong partnerships, such as the one we share with the town of Ponce Inlet. By joining our chamber, you gain access to a rich array of resources, support, and opportunities meticulously crafted to nurture your business's growth, prosperity within a vibrant business community, which we so enjoy sending many of our visitors to the town of Ponce Inlet. As a member, you will enjoy an array of exclusive benefits tailored to suit your unique needs, including the networking opportunities, which many of your town staff and mayor have participated in and will continue to participate, visibility and promotion, community engagement, and actively collaborating on many of our wonderful events. On that note, I would like to present a plaque to Mayor Perinsky for a photo op. This is the member plaque that we hope you will be a long-term member. Each year you will receive an additional year to proudly display. And if I could have somebody from the audience just take a photo, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming.
Ms. Hegan, thank you so much for coming here today. We really appreciate it, and we're going to share with the public a bit more later of what happened this morning, but it was quite an event. Thank you. We are down to our consent agenda. There are three items on the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull an item? Anyone here? Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the consent agenda passes as presented. Item 8. Old new business items preferred at the beginning of the meeting. A, consideration of a 3-year extension of Mead and Hunt's engineering services contract. Mike?
Yes, thank you. So the firm of Mead & Hunt, and previously they were known as Quinton Hampton and Associates, have served as the town's engineering firm for decades. They know the town, they're familiar with the town, they've worked with the town on many, many projects. We are under an extension of the contract that expires at the end of this month. So what you have before you is a proposal to extend that for another 3 years. Of course, they are now, this firm is one of several firms that the town has under contract for engineering services, but we value their contribution to this town and specifically their knowledge of this town. So we were recommending approval of the next three-year contract.
Thank you, Mike. And I do believe we have a representative from Mead and Hunt here. Yes, hello. Would you be kind enough to come up here? Because I have a feeling perhaps that someone in the one of our council members has any questions. Skip? Mm-hmm. Okay. Please, go right ahead. Oh, well, you know what? Please introduce yourself.
I'm David King with Mead and Hunt.
Thank you.
And formerly of Quentin Hampton Associates, too. So.
Thank you. Okay.
Hi. How you doing?
Pretty good.
And I'll direct this to Michael and to you also. The first thing that I looked at, and I know we're saying that it's a three-year agreement, but if you look at the bottom of the page, it said this schedule of billing rates is effective January 1st, 2024, and will remain in effect until December 31st, 2024, unless unforeseen increases in operational costs are encountered. We reserve the right to change the rates to reflect such increases. So we're looking for a three-year commitment, but we're basically getting a one-year commitment from you guys, correct?
That rate schedule is based on that. There's unknowns. You know, we don't know what happens with the labor costs and stuff like that. So that's our approach. That's our desire to have a one-year rate table and then have the ability to adjust. We don't always adjust, and in years past, we haven't always adjusted the rate table, but we like to have that ability.
So, again, technically, Michael, it's a one-year agreement, not a three-year agreement.
Yeah, the pricing structure, you're correct, would be correct. 1 year.
Okay. I like analyzing things, so you can correct me when I'm wrong, please.
I'm an engineer. I like it, too.
Looking at the rate schedule from 2021 and then looking at the new rate schedule 2024, we're looking at 24% increase on the clerical, 19% technical editor. The registered land surveyors is up 20%. Everything across the board is 20% until you get to the project planner, 41%. The senior project engineers, 50%. And then the other, and you can answer those in a second. The other thing I noticed is there's four new positions on here that were not on the last one. And in 20 to 2021, we spent, I'll round it, $30,000. 21, 22, $391,000. 22, 23, $194,000. So my concern is that's some pretty big dollars, and I know it all depends upon the projects that we have going on and what we need you for. But the one that really stuck out to me was a senior client project manager of $309 an hour. Please tell me we're not ever going to have one of those.
So one of the things that's happened over the years since Quentin Hampton Associates, I was one of the owners of Quentin Hampton Associates, and for the decades we have been here, and I have to apologize to Kim McCall because she asked for some background information. I got it to her minutes before the meeting because I forgot to hit send. As I was sitting in the parking lot, I'm going, oh, I was supposed to send that an hour ago. So, but we actually, and I don't know if she has copies to share, but we actually looked at over the years what kind of how we have evolved, if you will. So our depth of our staff and our roles have evolved, if you will. So they've stretched, and you're right. We have some proposed new roles in this schedule than that we didn't have in last year's schedule. But what that allows us to do is really apply the appropriate personnel to the job. And to your point, no, the high cost people, those are involved in very limited activities on a project level, if you will. So what we're able to do with a deeper staff and deeper bench is to apply the right cost effective personnel to the job. So we're utilizing more of that middle staff, if you will.
So and maybe you can't answer this, but based on the $194,000 that we spent in 22-23, would any of these new created positions now apply to what we had last year? Would we be utilizing that? And I'm not trying to cause any problems, but I think it's something, Michael, that we need to analyze before we move forward because, again, we're talking about $194,000, $391,000, and $30,000. I don't know if there's any other options out there. I know we're comfortable with them. They understand the town, and I'm all about comfort, and Jane and I both hate change. But based on looking at the new positions and how that could potentially affect the dollars that we spend, and what we budgeted this year, we could come up with a shortfall.
Well, that's correct. And that was the reason last year we entertained contracts with multiple firms so that we're not locked into one. You know, so we have the ability to shop around, if you will.
Okay, so for my knowledge, and I'd say probably the council, how do we choose which consultant engineer that we utilize?
It's based on, first of all, qualifications needed for the job, that particular job, and then also their availability. As Mead & Hunt has grown nationally, you know, we have found they're less able to do some of the smaller projects that we still need. Mm-hmm. You know, but big projects such as the design of the septic to sewer plan, you know, they are definitely involved in that. I mean, those are huge design projects.
Yeah. And again, I understand inflation. You know, we've all been touched by that. But some of these increases seem pretty high. And I'll, for time's sake, I went through with each one of these. And the smallest that I found was 19%. And again, one was up to 69%. And it's just alarming. So I would prefer not to rush into a decision today and give the staff time to go back and analyze it and come back with some data that maybe would show us here's how these new positions potentially would affect us and these rate increases, because again, you're over 20% of each one of them.
That's so that I understand the concern you have, and actually I'll first pose it as a question to you. Do the new positions necessarily increase the overall cost of the job, or is it more people are working on it at a particular time, so it is done differently, or it's done faster, or it's done sooner?
So, and answer it another way, and I think this may address your concerns too, is most every job we do, we're not doing a lot of efforts on an hourly rate basis. And I can tell you on an hourly rate basis, and what Mike was saying, we aren't usually the most effective, cost effective, if you will. There's smaller outfits that charge lesser rates, and if you are charging on an hourly basis, there might be better choices from a cost standpoint. Qualifications, we may have an argument, but most of our jobs are done on a lump sum basis. So mm-hmm. those jobs on the individual basis are looked at on value. So if we did the same exact job last year under a certain rate schedule versus this schedule, it would still be the same level of effort, if you will. And what we're able to do with some broader range staff is use lesser costs, but adequately trained and the right people on the project. So because we can't defend that, hey, we did a project, we're going to do a similar, exactly same project this year than last year, and it's going to cost 50, 60, 70% more. It can't make sense. So we have to work on our side to make it cost effective for the town, and that's what our plan is. And what happens over time is we evolve, and obviously hopefully everybody's salaries go up if they stay with us. But then we also get a deeper bench, and we get different roles, and we get some higher classification of employees as we continue to grow. But each and every job, we're going to tackle it and bring the most cost-effective approach to the town that we can.
And am I correct in saying that each job, they're going to first provide us with all of the specifications, and we would have to approve it?
Well, that's correct. Yeah, when we have a task order like design of a new project, we want to get, now that we have different firms under contract, we would want to see what it's going to cost and how quickly they can do it.
Skip, what I'm wondering is that I hear everything that you're saying, but I don't know if it makes a difference to the work that we're all going to be doing. Is that if there's a job and it will be bid and they'll provide us with the cost, if we're not satisfied with it or if we think it could be done differently by another firm, we will always have that choice.
And I agree, but Michael, so the other firm that we're utilizing, you know, you made the statement earlier that, you know, these guys know Ponce inside and out. Does the other firm also have that knowledge? And is the other firm capable of doing everything that Mead & Hunt can do?
Yeah, with a national firm, of course, they can draw from experts nationally, you know, throughout. The other firm that we've done a lot of work with, they are local to Daytona Beach area, so they're familiar with that as any other, you know, firm or other city in this area.
So when we bid this out, the best way, I guess, for me to look at it, is we can throw the hourly rates out the window because it really doesn't matter to us. It's $30,000 to do XYZ, and then company XYZ comes in besides Mead and Hunt and says, well, you know, we can do it for $28,000. Is that
correct? Yeah, ultimately, and these projects, keep in mind, they're budgeted. I mean, if we have something in mind to do, it's going to be there's a set amount in our budget to do it.
So our budget for this year we're currently working on, did we base our budgeted numbers off of the old rates or these new rates?
That would be the old rates. But keep in mind, though, I mean, when we're for large projects like that, I mean, we're looking at a set amount, you know, not necessarily the hourly rates for different firms. We want to know what the total cost is going to be to do it. There are other services that we use Mead and Hunt for, like inspections or rather plan reviews. You know, if there's something if our building official is reviewing, we get an application in for a commercial project, that's beyond the ability of our building official to review in terms of like stormwater. So we would send it to them, in which case, you know, as a town engineer, they review it, but then that cost gets passed on to the applicant.
Right. Okay, and the last thing I'll ask, and I'll shut up, but I still go back to wanting a three-year agreement, and their prices are only as good as 1 year. So what's our advantage or disadvantage of saying, okay, you know, we'll sign up for 1 year and review it next year, or we roll the dice and say, oh, we'll give you 3 years, and these guys decide to bring in some more experts that cost them more money and it costs us more money? Just a question.
Yeah, the three-year term, I believe that is per the original contract, that it can be extended in three-year terms, but I would think if the council wants to revisit this in a year, I mean, you have that ability.
So we're not locking ourselves in for 3 years, even though you're requesting 3 years. And again, I'm trying to understand.
It's the contract, like I said, but yeah, I mean, if you want to, I would think you can revisit that.
Okay.
How do you feel, Skip? Are you comfortable in moving forward?
Yeah, I would feel more comfortable. And again, I'm not sure what kind of reports that you gave Kim and our accounting team before you got here, but I would feel more comfortable revisiting this after they have a chance to analyze what you sent to them and we didn't receive it as a council. So, and I'm not saying it would change my mind either way or the other, but, you know, to me, I think a little more research before we make this final decision.
Could you share with us what it is you provided to our town clerk before you arrived?
Yes. So it was kind of a history lesson. So we went back and looked at our contract across the multiple years. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different times things were updated, if you will. And as those things were updated, we were adding roles to our team continued to grow. So we were adding different services: Sioux subsurface utility engineering, GIS, transportation. We were helping out with the building department for a while, and so we were adding those services as we went along. So that's kind of grown and contracted, if you will. And then when Quentin Hampton Associates, when Brad and I decided to join Mead and Hunt, then we utilized Mead and Hunt's style of roles, if you will. So it's so, and in the rows across, we tried to say, hey, this is how that thing's carried across. That what we used to, I mean, back at Quentin Hampton, we had 10 roles, and that was because it was just us. I mean, it was just a small group of us. So, but we tried to show how that carries across. And then, you know, kind of how would it be applied today? And in today's schedule, if you will, or a list of roles, there's a lot more roles. And that, again, goes to the point that we have the ability to apply a diverse project team to each and every project. And what that does, you know, 10, 15 years ago, Brad and I and other maybe on the high end of the scale, we're spending a lot more hours on projects. Now we have, you know, junior project managers and experienced engineers, but junior engineers working on projects. So So that's kind of how the evolution works. And I would like to say at one point, and I think it's kind of been talked around, is you know, whatever your level of approval is, you know, most of the projects we're working on are coming back to you for consideration. And in that, you'll see a breakdown of the cost. So you'll see how many of those high-cost individuals, how many hours are being proposed being spent on that project. It's normally always done as a lump sum, so it's not to exceed. So it's up to us to live within that budget, too. So you'll have plenty of opportunity, hopefully, in the next 3 years as we're continuing to do projects with you to see how that breakdown works and see how many expensive hours we're charging, you know, in theory we would be charging the town, which won't be a lot because, again, we'll be distributing that to the right personnel across the team.
Well, I appreciate the representations on the record, and based upon that, I personally am comfortable in moving forward because I really don't see how any analysis right at this moment would change ultimately our ability to either accept or not accept them on future projects. So that's my thought. Is there anyone else? Joe?
Just some clarification. Every project that we engage you in, I'm assuming you will provide us with a detailed proposal by line item outlining the extra personnel that you will assign to different aspects of the proposal inside the job, correct?
Correct. We will. It's usually a lump sum amount. Some things are based on an hourly basis or a time and expense basis. Most of the time it's a lump sum, but we'll have a breakdown of that to lump sum amount, showing the hours and what the expected hours are of that. And again, it's a not to exceed, it's a lump sum. So if y'all accept that, we have to live by that. And if we have 10 hours of one individual and it takes 12, that's on us.
In the transition from year one to year two, where the price escalation would occur, we would have the opportunity then as a municipality to come back to negotiate some of the pricing that you present.
Yeah, and like what I said, you know, we'd like to have the opportunity because we don't know nobody knows what to do. You know, nobody has a perfect crystal ball. So we like to hold those, or like to have yearly rate adjustments, or have the ability to. In the past cycle, we didn't. We held things for multiple years, and we will have that opportunity again, and that may make the most sense. But in theory, the first work order that we delivered to staff after the year is up, if you will, we may propose that or we may decide to stick with it. But either or, it would be coming before you for consideration. So you'll have a chance to say yay or nay to, hey, we like it, but we want to stick with the old rate schedule. So
okay, but rather than saying yay or nay, it is open to negotiation on a line item basis, correct?
Right now or on the individual projects?
I'm talking about any future project that might come up. I spent my life negotiating large contracts, and everything is negotiable.
Agreed, yeah, and agreed. The process of us doing our best to estimate what the project's going to take, work out with staff until they feel satisfied, and that comes before you. You all have that opportunity to negotiate.
Right. Yes. Good. Understood.
Bill? Gary?
Just a comment. Having played with these contracts for over 16 years, I've seen them all, and they're all basically the standard. This is exactly what you get. You get the hourly rate. You see what you're going to do. You can have a cost not to exceed smaller contract. You can have an estimated cost of what it will be in the hours. The interesting issue here is, how do you keep track of the hours? You do not know how many hours a consultant spends on any piece of this, just like the attorney's contracts. If you don't have a working relationship with the entity and don't trust them to be honest, find a new consultant. But it'll be the same contract that you see here.
And Gary, I'll agree with that, but our attorney contract, we get our breakdown every month. And they show the hours.
You can get a breakdown of that, but you do not know how many hours they actually spent. They can tell you how many hours they spent. You don't know whether that's a good number or not. And you could even check their timesheets. but that can all be a nebulous area. Right. So you're fighting over something. You have to have a mutual trust.
And Gary, understand, I'm not fighting over this. I'm trying to make sure that everybody understands when you look at 60% increase in pricing, 20% increase in pricing, it's not arguing. It's making sure that we totally understand what we're approving. And I agree. Now that I understand, it's, okay, here's a lump sum. The job could be $100,000. You could take it or you don't. And if you don't, then, you know, we move on to someone else. I get it now. I understand it. But when I see price increases like this, it has to be questioned, and that's all I'm doing.
Well, questioning is fine, but delaying it is a waste of time.
And I've lived with their evolution for many, many years, and I feel very comfortable in moving forward. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to come up and speak to the contract? Yes, Mr. Bullard.
Robert Bullard, 4802 South Peninsula Drive, Ponce Inlet. I've been doing it almost as long as Gary. And I'd like to say that Mead and Hunt has been very helpful to the Veterans Association, no charge to the association, in getting some documentation together to support plans for additional work at the memorial site.
Yes.
And I anticipate that I'll be at them again for a little help on a couple of things. That's been very generous. That's not included in their fees. When I had a staff of a dozen or so years ago, working only for private clients, except condominium boards, which I don't know what category condominium boards are in, but we had a fee schedule that was pretty solid for usually 3 years. And of course, if I saw it was going to happen in the future, I'd let everybody know this is what we're up against. The biggest factor in affecting fee schedules in my business, and again, private clients, was insurance, liability insurance. And one agent told me, he said, look, this was a general liability broker, said, look, your insurance rate as a structural engineer working on the coastline of Florida is second only to an OBGYN in risk. Now, that explains the insurance side of this. I don't think Mead and Hunt does much structural engineering. No, not here locally anyway, is that correct? You're lucky, because it would be a lot higher. If I were still in business and had that staff, my fees as principal would exceed the highest number you heard. And I would have insurance. The insurance factor may apply to that particular top value person and what his or her relationship is with respect to risk. So all these things need to be considered. If they can get a general civil, they know the town, if they're doing general civil engineering works, waters and sewers, they know what's in the ground. They know what they need to do. They can come up with a pretty decent number. When I started out in civil engineering, I was project engineer for 10,000-acre land development, about five times the size of this town. And we were able to come up very close to what the numbers were going to be for the subcontractor engineers that we were hiring to do the work. And more often than not, they came in lower numbers than I did as project engineer for the corporation. So it is what it is, and I think it would be a good idea to continue with Mead and Hunt and just do diligence like Skip is doing on a project-by-project basis. Thank you.
Robert, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. So, I'll make the motion. I move to approve the proposed three-year extension to the engineering services contract dated February 21, 2002 with Mead and Hunt attached as item 8A-2 with its increased fee schedule as set forth in attachment 8A-3 to the February 15, 2024 agenda.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. A roll call, please.
Mayor Mayor Perutzky?
Yes.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. 8D, lien abatement request, Cynthia House and Rhonda Whitwer, 4620 Riverwalk Village Court, 7302. Mr. Hooker. Or, yeah. No. Are you okay, Dave? Okay.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Attorney Smith, Town Manager Disher. The agenda item before you is a request by Ms. House, co-owner of 4620 Riverwalk Village Court, Unit 7302, for an abatement or a reduction in an outstanding code enforcement lien. She's seeking a reduction or an abatement of a $5,750 code enforcement lien, which was imposed on June 5th, 2023. This amount comprises of a $5,500 fine, accumulating at a rate of $25 per day for 220 days, along with the additional $250 administration fee, resulting in a total fine amount of $5,750. It should be noted that the property achieved compliance on January 1, 2024. On November 1st, 2022, staff was alerted to the expiration of a rental permit. Notice of violation was issued with compliance date of November 21st, 2022. On November 11th, Ms. House emailed Travis Mincy, the rental housing inspector, confirming that she received the certified notice of violation and also obtained the new rental permit application as required. On March 28th, 2023, after several months of noncompliance, a formal notice of hearing was issued to the property owner. Code Enforcement Board heard the case on April 24th, 2023. Code Enforcement Board ordered the case to be continued until the following meeting of May 22nd. Subsequently, the case was heard on the 22nd of May, which the owner was found in violation of the cited adopted codes, granted the owner 14 days, which was on or before June 5th, 2023, to have the property in compliance. At the July 24th, 2023 Code Enforcement Board hearing, board confirmed that the property remained in noncompliance of their order and issued the order of noncompliance and imposition of fine, retroactive to the original time frame of the order of June 5th, 2023. On October 25th, staff sent certified letters to the owners addressing on file, advising them of the potential foreclosure proceedings and how to avoid the said proceedings. Certified letter was received by the owner on November 2nd, and then on January 11th, 2024, the outstanding permits were paid in full, therefore seizing the accrual of the outstanding lien. Ms. House is here. Ms. Cynthia House is here to speak on her behalf if you have any questions for her.
Before we move to Ms. House, does any council member have a question for Mr. Hooker? No. Okay. Ms. House, would you like to address the council?
Yes. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I almost didn't get out with the winter storm that we got. I came down from New Jersey. I'm here just to ask for leniency on my fine. The last 2 years, I've been in a process of, you know, being downsized. I've been working between 3 to 5 roles. I will be losing my job in June. They've hired 3 people in Mexico to replace me. And I am highly leveraged. I ended up first coming into Ponce Inlet. I was married at the time. We put a deposit down in the year 2000, and then things were paused, and then by the time that the building started, we had parted ways, and so that's when I made the decision, because I love the area so much to basically go beyond my means. And, you know, I took it over myself with the goal of coming down here when I retire to be a full-time resident. And I should have opened the mail. I received the mail. I didn't. I knew it was for the permit fees that I didn't have, because my tenant, who has been in there since 2020, has had a lot of trouble with his employment. He's in the hotel industry, and he's lost his job and then gone into places where he hasn't. And the information that I shared with you, and it doesn't cover all the loans and liens that I have. I'm pretty highly leveraged, and I depend on receiving rent to be able to make my payments and things. So I knew that it was something that I didn't have at the moment, and I didn't realize that a daily fine was being assessed, and that's completely on me, just being overwhelmed. So, you know, my fault. I took money out of my retirement savings to make good on the permit, and I'm just here to ask for some leniency, and happy to answer any questions. And sorry for getting emotional. I have a lot going on.
Does anyone have a question for Ms. House?
I do.
Go ahead.
One question for you. This was the email that Travis sent to you, and it was dated November 14th, 2022. And you confirmed that you received the email, and it was concerning the rental payment for the license. And you made the statement that you'd get back, you're going to do it online, and you'd get back to him later tonight or tomorrow at the latest, and nothing happened.
Yeah, because I didn't. I've been so overwhelmed with working multiple roles for a long time, and I absolutely should have made time for that, and I should have made sure I understood the consequences, and I did not, and that's on me.
One last question in your note, the handwritten note that you had, you said, "I'm not trying to circumvent any system. In fact, when I first became aware of this agreement, I paid the initial payment for 2021-2022. So that was the first time of the lease? Okay.
That was in September and then it was due right again in October, because it's October period, right. And the two back-to-back.
But you were aware that there is a fee.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh, it wasn't on. I'm sorry. I thought the light was on. You know, technology.
I heard you, though. Okay. I could hear you.
That was my only concern, is the Code Enforcement Board and the Code Enforcement Department really tried to work with you. And I understand what you're talking about, not the person not being able to have the job and the turmoil that you were going through. But at some point, I don't understand why you didn't make contact back with them before today and saying, "Hey, guys, I'm going to send you the check. Can I pay the check on time? Whatever the case may be. And that's the thing that bothers me, that I don't understand. I mean, the packet that you just gave, I tried to read it as quickly as I could with everything. But that's the thing. It's like the person who was up here talking about the 28-day rental.
Right.
I mean, those people aren't getting noticed. If someone in that condominium was actually keeping record, because this happened where I live. We had a person that every other week we saw a new car come in. We started keeping license plates. And the day they arrived, the day they left, and then we actually found them on Airbnb. And Mr. Hooker's department couldn't have been nicer to those people to try and give them an opportunity.